Welcome to the Domestic Abuse Breakthrough Show, where we tackle violence against women and girls through education, empowerment, and hope. Join Kate, a survivor and advocate, as she shares insights, strategies, and stories that inspire healing and action. Together, we'll break the cycle and pave the way for a future of safety and strength. This show contains a trigger warning. And now, here's your host, Kate Beasley.
So welcome back to another episode. And today I am joined by Isabel Vine, who is famously known as the whistleblower who was the 999 operator, who many of you might have seen on the news. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So just want to share a little bit for anybody who doesn't know. I would imagine many people will have seen your short interviews on the news.
Yeah.
Just want to share a little bit about your backstory as to where you've come from and everything.
Yeah. I'm from Southwest London. I joined the police in 2020 as a call handler. And I spent about 2 years doing that. And then I went into dispatching in the control room with the radios and for another 2 years. And then I left about 6 months ago. Witnessed wrongdoing, reported it. It all went pear-shaped. Lots of dodgy things happened. And I left and I wasn't getting anywhere with the Met internally. So I took it legally, and it's now in the media, and I'm sort of just ranting and raving to everyone about it. And I've set up an organisation now to support future whistleblowers or current whistleblowers or anyone thinking about doing it, and sort of taking in testimonies and anonymously publishing them to just sort of expose what is going on. That's really where I'm at the moment.
So what sort of things did you come across in your day-to-day working life as a call handler?
The job was all right, to be fair. I mean, you do 12-hour shifts, you probably take about 60 calls a shift. It's very fast-paced. You deal with literally anything and everything. And it's interesting because the police take significantly more calls than the ambulance, Coast Guard or Fire Brigade, because if you call 999 and you don't speak, they all get filtered to the police. Yeah, it's quite a lot. It's quite fast paced. It's very intense, stressful, but, you know, rewarding. You're helping people. You're their first point of contact, which is quite rewarding. I really did enjoy the job at first, but it did have its flaws. And the most ironic thing is that everything but the actual job and anything but helping people and taking the calls, everything else was the issue, not the actual job. Just sort of the micromanagement and things like that. And one day, a couple of years into my career, I sat next to a colleague who was particularly vile, said terrible things, misogynistic, racist, just the most appalling comments. And I reported it. It just sort of went downhill from there, really. I don't know if you want me to go into it. I don't know if you, but
yeah,
people
no,
might
no, I mean, absolutely. Just, you know, it needs to be spoken about. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, so he made vile comments and sort of mimicked Sarah Everard's death. And then I sort of stayed behind after work to avoid seeing him. And then he ended up getting on my bus home and my tube home and saying, "I'm coming your way tonight," even though he lives in a completely different direction. So it was all really creepy. And I reported it, and it was just really badly dealt with. The first couple of weeks I heard nothing, and they were like making me, like asking me to go and work next to him and stuff like that. And even after they told him I'd complained, and there were just so many like failures. But then when it finally did get investigated, 6 months later, he was dismissed for gross misconduct at Scotland Yard, which was really good because I was really happy that they were taking it seriously. And they said they don't want people like that in the Met, and, you know, people shouldn't be dealing with vulnerable callers and people calling the police and then being met with racism and misogynistic opinions and mindsets. So I was really, really proud. And then a few months went on, and then I got told that he'd appealed, he'd won, and he'd been rehired. And he'd appealed on the basis that the punishment was too hard. And the decision maker agreed with him and said, yeah, I don't think it's gross misconduct. I think it's misconduct only. The Violence Against Women and Girls campaign and the Baroness Casey report have two heavily influenced panel members. And you can have any opinion you want in the police, no matter how harmful. But it's only if it turns into an action that they'll act. So I was just absolutely flabbergasted, and was like raging at those comments as well, because I mean, I don't know how much you can say on the show, but you know, he used a very derogatory word for a rape victim and wished that immigrants would F off back home and whispered Sarah Everard's name in my ear whilst I was taking live 909 calls, and then like followed my journey home, and then someone's rehired him thinking it wasn't that bad. So I was shocked, and then I escalated his rationale because I just wasn't happy with that, and I heard nothing. And then they told me it was really serious and someone really high up in the Met was gonna look into the situation. I didn't hear for 5 months, and then I chased it myself, and then it turned out that no one knew about the complaint I made. So the people who I complained to the department had just binned it, basically. So I just left because it was just becoming just a circus. And I was just mentally frazzled, and then I was going to work taking like dispatching but like live boroughs and incidents going on, but I was like constantly irritated by policing, and I was just felt really fraudulent. Like, how can we go out and like help people if we don't even care about like the standards of the people that we're hiring? So I ended up just having to leave. And yeah, I've now got an employment tribunal, which is not happening till 2027, which I'm getting quite a lot of stick for in the media about, because, well, not the media, but in social media, because people are saying, you know, it's just for money and whatnot. But any money that, if I do win, which I probably won't because I've gone to the media, which I always knew would be a risk, but I just wanted to get the message out there over a paycheck. But any money that I would get would be money that I'd lost, which I'd be super entitled to. And any money that I would win from it would go into my organisation to help whistleblowers. That's really sort of what happened, and I'm just sort of rolling with the punches now.
And the thing is, though, I mean that kind of attitude that, well, as long as it's just a thought and they don't act upon it, you know, the problem is when we are, you know, we have to view every behavior and every action through a trauma-informed lens. And if they have those deep-rooted beliefs about anybody, that is potentially damaging if it were to be acted upon. All it takes is for them. I mean, we spoke before we started recording, didn't we? That, you know, Met, they do a very, very difficult job. Nobody can take that away from them. And all it takes, and this goes for anybody, we're all human beings at the end of the day. And if we are on capacity overload, all it takes is for that officer to have had a really, really crappy week. Been out to had dealt with several, you know, difficult cases. Their workload is spilling over, and all it takes is for them to be faced with somebody who they have those beliefs about, and they snap, and they're vocalized. That's literally all it takes. I mean, if somebody can say something that's out of character when they are under pressure anyway, which is a reactive response, you can certainly say it if you're on capacity overload and you genuinely have those beliefs. So, you know, that approach in my eyes is a very dangerous game to play when your workforce is responsible for other people's safety.
100%. And you know, I always know, and you know, I always consider, you know, the police officers have and police staff have an intense workload, specifically officers, because, you know, especially if you're in response, you know, if you're going out taking 999 calls and you're dealing all day, you have to stay extra 4 hours because something's spilled over, but then you've got to like do like paperwork for like five other cases that you're assigned to. I can't even imagine how stressful that must be. But yeah, like you say, it can just take being with another member of staff or an officer who has those opinions, and you've had a crap week. But particularly, it's dangerous when, well, it's common that the people with those dangerous mindsets are the ones high up. So if there's no accountability for them and that's what they think, then officers below and staff below will copy as well and think that, you know, this is an okay environment to spread these like harmful comments or dark humor or whatnot. And that is quite the case. You know, it's the people high up where there is no accountability or there is no consequence because they are the higher up. They sort of feed in, I don't know, yeah, feed this terrible environment that trickles down ultimately to the victim, that's right at the end of the line, to the victim that, you know, these officers are going and working for. But, you know, it's terrible the amount of pressure they're under, but at the same time, maybe the police as a system have more duty of care to their officers and staff, and they obviously need to put in better mental health, well-being support systems, anything. But then I suppose they'll just say, oh, well, there's no funding, there's no money. But there's I know, as being in the police, that there are a lot of things they're wasting money on.
Oh,
So
100%. It's the
yeah,
same for any
exactly.
system, isn't it, though?
Exactly.
Whether we're talking about medical, the NHS, or the
Yeah.
police, or they
Exactly.
do waste, it's false
He
economy a
did.
lot of the time.
Yeah, and it will irritate anyone else who has worked in a public or emergency service when you hear press releases or on the news or the radio or whatnot. You know, we need more funding. We're so underfunded. So, and you just go to work and you just think you're wasting all this money. It's actually a slap in the face. It's so badly managed, and you're saying, well, we can't meet this objective because we're so underfunded. No, you're wasting money in so many different places. Oh, it's one big circus, I think.
You know, and as I've covered this, with some forces, where I have said, this is, unless you complete everything in life, whether when we're talking about risk, it's a jigsaw puzzle, whether we're talking about our health or whether we're talking about our physical safety, it's a jigsaw puzzle. Unless we complete that jigsaw puzzle, one piece can make the whole thing fall apart. And when it comes to policing, they need there's huge training gaps, huge training gaps. So they need to address the training gaps. They also need to they seem to be ploughing an awful lot of money into perpetrator programs, which in my opinion, my professional opinion, I don't think they're fit for purpose. It's not taking into consideration the psychology of victims of perpetrators, sorry. And in the process, it is diminishing confidence further in the victims for reporting.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
their figures aren't as accurate as what they claim to be. Because I can't possibly, because if a victim's not re reporting reoffending, how would they ever know if they're reoffending?
Yeah,
They would never
exactly.
know.
Yeah.
And I've actually had this conversation with Andrew Wadey at the Met, actually. And I covered that with him, and I said, your figures aren't accurate, and I had to explain exactly what I've just said there. I said, and as well, we know that only less than 25% report to the police. Well, what if they move on to a new relationship and that new partner falls into that higher bracket that isn't reporting? Again, you would never know.
You'd never
You
know
would never
exactly.
know. It's all very well and good saying, oh, we're getting these results. You can't say that with conviction at all. You cannot say beyond reasonable doubt, and everything's beyond reasonable doubt, remember. You can't say that, because Perpetrators are very manipulative. They can keep their nose clean for a period of time if they've got something to gain. And what they've got to gain is avoiding court, avoiding accountability. So they will do that until the spotlight's off them, and then they will revert back to form when they think it's safe to do so.
Safe to do
But they
exactly.
never forget. They
No.
never forget. And the victim will pay the price for it potentially. And if she feels, and I say she because majority of the time it is the
It's
she,
been, yeah.
feels that she's being failed and let down and not supported, and maybe feels that the system's enabled the perpetrator and facilitated this escalating behaviour, she's going to be less likely to want to report. And that's what I hear time and time again from victims, is I wish I'd never reported.
Exactly. And do you know everything you've just said there, I can resonate so much. Obviously, I'm not a victim of any crime or whatnot, but in terms of the misconduct process, where they rehired him and only gave him a warning, I was never happy with that, because I said, well, he'll just be fine for that warning period, and then after the warning period's gone over, then he'll just be happy that he's got his job and continue his bad behavior. So a warning is or this controlled amount of pit time, which you think is enough to restrict him. He'll if he's clever, he'll just be good for that amount of time. And then obviously, with the whole thing about victims losing trust and not wanting to report anything further, well, I always said, and obviously it's different because it's misconduct and I wasn't a victim of crime, but I would never report any misconduct ever again after my experience. And even it's gone so far into me that I won't even ring the police for myself now if it's a crime or anything. I'd only ever ring the police now if, like, I was in public and I saw someone on the butt end of a crime, or for someone else. But for me, I will never ever ring the police again. Never. So no, I'll just hope that I don't die.
I've had that said to me by officers as well, senior officers as well. Said the same thing to me. If I was victim of a crime, I wouldn't be reporting.
Because you know what the problem is with police, and I don't think it's not just policing, it's public services and emergency services. They are run like a business, and they are run chasing statistics. It's nothing. They are run with the focus being on anything but the people that they need to serve. So, for example, in call handling, and I'm sure it's the same for fire and NHS, etc., and Coast Guard, but you're getting all these calls coming in, and people are wanting to, the people on the victim are being victims of crimes, they're suicidal, etc. You need to help everyone, and a call takes as long as a call takes because you have to help the person. But no, because the police is run like a business, you have to meet certain targets. So you can only be on the phone for 4 minutes. So that means you have to try and help someone for 4 minutes, and then you have to hang up and do the next one. But you can't give a quality, service or caring service to someone in 4 minutes when you're like, oh gosh, okay, I need to get off the phone with you now, and someone's like about to jump off a bridge. And that's where there's a problem, because I suppose they have to measure the service, and I get that, but they measure it off timing and stats, not what's the word, not and I say this with quotation marks, not customer satisfaction. I know it's not customer satisfaction, but that's the only way I can say, that it should be measured on how well you're serving the public, not how quick you can meet these targets so you can impress the Home Office, and that circus. That's a whole other load of malarkey, but
And it needs to be dealt with on a case by case basis. I mean, there's some that you can get on and off, relatively quickly if you it's risk evaluated, well enough at the start of the call. But there'll be some where you need to dedicate more time to it because the
Definitely.
situation calls for it.
I've never forget this. I remember being on a call for 45 minutes because this, like, I think he was about 17, he'd overdosed and he was planning to jump off a bridge, and there was no police available, no ambulances available, and no one was communicating back with me. So I didn't know what was going on, and I was getting a supervisor in my ear going, you need to take more calls, like you need to hang up and move on to the next. And I was like, go away, I'm not going to hang up on this call, because if I do, and this A, I don't want to because it's gross and I want to help this person, but B, if I hang up and they jump, the Met are going to drag me to court and blame it on me, and I will have no support then, and I will be the one on the front of the papers being dragged for being a terrible Met call handler who doesn't even have time for suicidal people. So yeah, it's just the way it's ran and the way public and emergency services are ran are just, it's just so terrible. It really is. I don't know why they need to satisfy the Home Office and Target's more. Well, I suppose it's because they're getting funding, so they have to prove that the funding's worth it. But then there's got to be another way where the public don't suffer the consequences of this stupid system. But God knows. What a problem. It
It's a huge problem.
is, it is. And it's the same
It
for teaching. It's the same for, all public and emergency services. It's terrible.
They're all under pressure. Every last one of them are under pressure, but at the end of the day, lives are at risk. I mean, it's like obviously they're eager to get, kids back into school and get their school attendance up, but we have to look at why these children don't feel safe.
Yeah,
Many teachers don't feel safe going into work.
yeah.
You've got it's not like when you're in the police, you take that job knowing the risks. As a teacher, you don't take that
No,
job
yeah.
expecting to be threatened with a
Yeah.
weapon in a classroom.
Yeah.
That's not what you don't take up that job with that expectation.
No, that's dreadful.
So would I want that job?
Yeah.
Absolutely not. No.
And also, you
No.
getting paid peanuts for it as well.
Yeah,
That's the other end
exactly.
of it. Long hours, peanuts, and I don't blame. And then that's why you get teachers who are unhappy, who then teach terribly and just don't care. And then it's just a vicious cycle of crap teaching because the teachers are being badly looked after. And then the students are just turning out terribly. And then society is just terrible. It's just a terrible, vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, we have so much work
No, we
to
have.
do. What work, I don't know.
Oh, God.
Gosh, it's terrible. And that's another thing. Like I say, there's so much work to do, which is just unfortunate because any big piece of work or massive change, it's always met with resistance from the government. Like in terms of my campaigning and wanting to reform the way public services deal with misconduct, when I brought that to government, they're really resistant towards it because it's such a big change. They don't want to put in enough effort to make things better because it's too much hassle. It's just, well, what can we do? We can only try.
We
We can
can. We've got
only
to
try.
keep shouting though, because if we don't,
Yes.
then nothing will ever change.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. And the more people that hear us shouting, maybe we'll agree and join forces, and then the more, the merrier, and more people that, want to see change will help put pressure, and then maybe one day there will be change. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But the way society is turning out at the moment, like it's so strange. Like I feel like there's, but this is only personal to me, and I'm not saying it's fact, and it's probably different for so many people, and people might think, oh, you're only just realizing now. But in the last 5 years, since COVID, I've just really, really recently just acknowledged like how damaged society is, and just the foundations and the mechanisms of that what keeps society going are so flawed and damaged. And I've only just started really, it's only just really hit me since COVID, really, in the last sort of 5 years. But maybe I was sort of half asleep or just drunk in my 20s. But
Well, COVID did shine a great big spotlight on, and on people's behaviours, ability to cope, pressure, and I mean, obviously, we saw a rise in domestic abuse cases in COVID. It wasn't that COVID lockdown suddenly made lots of people perpetrators. It didn't at all.
No, just brought them
Behaviors
to
will have been
life.
there. It's just
Yeah.
that because of that confinement and the less distractions with life, it was harder to hide. So we're just going to break for another an interval, and we'll see you after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at ukhealthradio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So I mean obviously we've spoken a lot about the flaws in the system, and there are lots and lots of them, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
But you know, I think as it goes back to the same thing, you know, we do need better support for victims, better trauma-informed support for victims, and also, you know, better support internally for the people on the front line. You know, there was no support for you. You got no support. And that's the same for many, many officers as well. You know, there's no support there. I mean, obviously, look at that. What's he called? His name passes my mind. You know, the one that's been he's been fired for gross misconduct.
Oh, is the one who was shouting when he was arresting someone?
Yeah,
is it PC Lawn? No,
that's the one. Yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah. So you know, at the end of the day, he was fired for speaking inappropriately to a perpetrator with a knife.
With a knife,
you know,
yeah.
But his response was, if you're faced in that situation, you're operating from fight flight. How do they expect somebody to respond? You know, it's
yeah.
a bit of a, and again, it's very contradictory. So in one hand, they're excusing misogynistic and racist comments
yeah.
and views as, oh, it doesn't matter so long as they don't act upon it, which they
yeah.
very much act upon it.
Which they will, exactly.
In
yeah.
a situation like that, ironically.
Yeah.
And then you've got an officer being fired.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't fired for his physical restraint.
No, force.
He was
yeah.
fired for what? For his verbally
Verbal.
Upsetting him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And if you go through any force in the UK, in England, or the Met, for example, because that's the one I go through, because obviously I was part of the Met, but you will find they publish misconduct outcomes, and when you go through them, you will just, like, the hypocrisy and the irony is just laid out in front of you. Like, one day you'll have a report of an officer who's sent unsolicited pictures of his genitals to other officers and like not accepted no as an answer when they've asked them out. But then the next day or the same day, an officer after will get dismissed without notice because he skipped a train fare one day. Like, obviously, we want police officers and police staff to be everything that their ethics and their professionalism standards say. But if we're really gonna like enforce that, like, let's just not be stupid. Like, I'd rather have an officer that skips the train fare sometimes. Or, I mean, the thing with PC Lawn is when I watch the video, I have to be honest, I don't like the way he was speaking to the perpetrator, only because I just feel like, not because he's wrong or it was evil or harsh, but I just feel like if you start slipping the standards of how officers can behave, even though that wasn't that bad, what's to say, okay, so if we say, like, don't worry, PC Lawn, like, you're absolutely fine, like, yeah, it's really, really stressful, we get it, and, like, someone was, like, potentially scary with a weapon, completely get it, you can just say things like that. Then what's to say in a couple of years, and he's going to other calls, and then he starts getting physically, you know, like, it's just, I don't know, like, I feel like we have to have a very solid, strict boundary of what's acceptable and what's not. And PC Lawn, I have to agree with his dismissal. Oh, I don't know about his dismissal. Maybe like a warning, maybe? Or
This is where it goes back to the same, what we originally spoke, we spoke about it before the break. They need internal emotional support.
Yes, yes.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, if we were faced with some, and I have been, I have been faced with, being threatened with a knife.
Oh gosh, yeah.
So you automatically go into fight flight.
Yeah.
You know, when my ex threatened me with a knife and came at me with knives and told me what he was going to do to me, I went into fight flight.
Yeah.
I didn't do what you would expect me to do. Now, I actually started arguing back with him.
Wow.
But that is an automatic survival response. Exactly, yeah. So, you know, you've got to, you know, from me viewing his behaviour, in an ideal world, given his position, given his role, should he have spoken to him the way he did? No, of course he should.
Yeah.
He was surrounded by other ewes, apparently. There was other ones, you know, that we couldn't see in the camera footage.
Was he on his own or was he with other officers?
No, he was with another officer, but apparently that officer wasn't doing anything.
Oh, gosh. Do you know? Yeah, because I wonder, because when we get in training, we're always taught about the red mist. So when it's a bit like fight or flight, but it's kind of like the officer version, but it's kind of like
that
a bad
red for everybody. Red mist. Yeah. It's what it is. It's the primal drive. It's the primal response.
Yeah.
And it is a split. It's less than a second.
Yeah.
This is where I always say to anybody who is evaluating any violent acts.
Yeah.
Or verbal aggression, we've got to look at what happened before and what happened after.
So
there's a split second where it's a part of the brain called the parietal gray, and that is our primal part of the brain.
Right.
It responds to looks, certain looks, tones of voice, body gestures, hand gestures. It's not the physical words, it's the tone.
Got you.
That drives it. So, for example, let's take a perpetrator, for example. If a perpetrator's got the knife, is clenching the knife, that would trigger their primal response.
Yes.
Because, and it's a split second where they lose control. And we need to think about what happened before and what happened after. Was the actions before that momentary loss of control, and it's less than a second, that's all it is. Was that premeditated? And if it's not, then it's reactive. Now, I mean, I've interviewed, I don't know if you're familiar with Gemma Smith. So I know Gemma really well. So, you know, Gemma, classic example, it was reactive, it was impulsive what she did. The knife was there, it was like either me or him. But no, it ain't going to be me. Grabbed the knife before he did and stabbed him in the arm. She lost control momentarily and she stabbed him, obviously, more than she intended to stab him. But after, once she came back around and her awareness kicked in, now I've scared myself. And then she backed off. If you don't back off and you continue, it does one or two things. It either scares you or it fuels that empowerment. So if you continue, then that's premeditated. That's obviously premeditated. That would be classified as murder in my eyes if they were going to kill somebody. If they then, if it was very much reactive and then it was just a one strike and that's it, and it unfortunately that would be manslaughter in my eyes. So we've always got to look at what happened before and what happened after, because there are everybody's can fall into that trap of that momentary blackout that's less than a second. We've got to look at, is there a pattern forming here that is actually putting the public in danger? And that's what the force need to be doing. They can't just be looking at that isolated case. There needs to be that, is this out of character, or are we seeing a pattern forming in this behavior with a particular officer? If we're seeing a pattern forming, irregardless of whether they are there's intent behind their action or whether it's a trauma response, we need to be removing them from the force because they are a risk to the
Risk.
public.
But
But if they are, if it is out of character and there isn't a pattern forming, then we need to look at, well, what would cause them to react in that way? Are they under pressure? What have they been dealt with recently? What's at home? And they need that emotional support. So it's not to say don't give them accountability. Yes, give them accountability, but it's got to be in line with, okay, let's give you a warning. If this behavior continues, we are going to have to look at escalating further. But in the meantime, we're going to give you this emotional support that you clearly need. And I think that should be a given. Every officer, everybody who works on the front line needs that emotional support because they're human at the end of the day. You're being, I mean, even you as an ex-call handler, if you're hearing all these people threaten to throw themselves off bridges and all sorts, or people describing really horrific things, I mean, it has an impact on you. Must have an impact on you.
I mean, obviously, I've not witnessed anything because I wasn't frontline responding. But yeah, the things you hear are just absolutely dreadful, and there are no support. But I just think that's because I don't. Well, again, they'll say that they just don't have the funding to like properly put anything into place. But you know what really
False
shocked me
economy
was
again, though, isn't it? As we were
false,
saying, it's false economy.
false
It's like,
economy.
well,
Because then you're pouring money into things that are just really useless. But what really shocked me was that when I was in the police, I signed up. It's voluntary. I signed up to be a blue light champion, which was where you do like a 2-day course, and it's just about picking up signs of declining mental health or someone struggling, so that if you have a colleague that seems like they're a bit down or something, you know how to like intervene and maybe signpost or just be aware if other people are struggling. And that was always so important to me because I had in my first few years of policing, I had like a really bad period of just feeling so anxious. And I just thought, well, I don't want anyone else to feel like this and have to come to work. Like it's dreadful. So I thought, I'll sign up and do this. So I can help other people if they feel the same. So I did that and it was really good. But then when I left, I realized and I found out that, I mean, in my department, there are only three blue light champions, and it wasn't mandatory for any line managers to be blue light champion trained. So you could have a line manager that hadn't been on this course, which told you about mental health, what signs to look for in staff if they're struggling. And these are people who are in charge of groups of staff, and they haven't even had training in mental health support or when to know that your colleague might, you know, there was I think a year into when I went into the police in 21, I believe. One of the ladies in my department sadly took her own life, and her line manager wasn't blue light trained or anything. And maybe if she was, or they were, they could have picked up on signs. Like, it's just,
it goes back to training gaps again. It's training gaps all around.
But yeah. I just don't understand that in public emergency services, because they're all about covering their backs and making sure they're doing everything to not get in trouble. So I couldn't understand why they don't make it mandatory in all these services that anyone who's a manager or in control of staff has all these training qualifications just to tick their box to make it look like, you know, cover themselves. But they don't. But maybe they're waiting for something terrible to happen.
Trauma informed, as I keep saying to them, you know, trauma informed is not a, you know, it's a buzzword that people like to throw around, unfortunately.
Yes.
But trauma informed is not a nice to have, it's essential in this line of work.
Oh, 100%. And what terrifies me, especially like when I used to go on breaks and I used to go up, we used to have a rooftop where you could see the whole skyline of London and it was really nice. And you'd have the firearms officers next door and they would come up and I would just look at them and they've got like three guns on them and obviously a very stressful job. And I just think, I really hope you're mentally supported, because you have weapons. So like, God help us if you're not, sort of thing.
Well, there's a prime example of why this is so important. This internal mental health support is absolutely crucial, because you know, it only takes, like I just said to you, it only takes a split second of loss of control. And if you've got a weapon on you, that's a dangerous situation to be in. Really dangerous. Yeah.
Definitely. It's scary, but yeah, I mean, these services have a duty of care, but I don't think they care.
Some do, some care, but not enough, unfortunately.
Yeah, not enough. I think some people in them do, but there's not enough of them to actually make a change. Mm. But yeah,
we're just going to break for another interval, and we'll see you after the break.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So welcome back. So just to wrap up, what advice would you give to anybody who's experiencing, who's feeling not treated fairly in the force or any frontline position? And obviously the government and the system as a whole, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would say, just from my experience, and it's not only singular to the police or anything like that, any sort of force or system that you're part of, if you're witnessing things that are contradictory to what you signed up to and are not sitting well with you and are unsettling, but you're but you're scared to speak out because you don't want to lose your job, or you don't want to be ostracized, or you don't want judgment, or you don't want to look like a grass or a snitch, trust me, you will feel so much better if you just speak out. And if it's not to your organization directly, there are so many charities out there. There's Protect, whistleblowing charity, or even if you're don't want to whistleblow but you're struggling mentally with sort of the knowledge that you know, there's so many different charities, Mind, Samaritans, so many that can help and provide support. And then obviously there's my organization, which you can write your experiences in and we can publish them anonymously to sort of hold some type of accountability. But you're not alone. And I think people would be really surprised that more often than not, the person probably on their team or lots of people on their team are probably in the same position, but just no one wants to say anything because they don't want to ruffle the feathers. And it's incredibly intimidating to stand up to a system or an organization or a team or an inspector or someone higher than you. But everyone is equal, and no one is, I mean, I know we have hierarchy in jobs, but no one is, you know, an exception from doing the right thing or law, or, you know, everyone has to be held accountable. And if I always say this, if you speak up, you can make change, or you can contribute to change. Silence doesn't help change. And there are so many reasons why I understand with some people why they don't want to speak out. But you just have to try. And it is difficult, but, you know, and there's so many different scenarios that, you know, I can't even imagine being in to give advice. But I personally have felt so much better since I've gotten out of the system and been able to speak out. I know whilst you're in all these systems, there are so many policies put in place that, you know, you might get dismissed because you're speaking about us negatively. But, you know, if something is niggling at you and it's not sitting right, my advice would be to just leave and or get out and be able to speak, because no job and no person should silence someone else. That is wrong. And the fact that we have these systems in place to silence its employees is so sickening, and change will never happen whilst we have policies like that. So, oh gosh, I'm terrible at giving advice, but, and you know, everyone has to do ultimately what's right for them. But I don't know. I've always lived my life as speaking out, because I can't live with myself if I'm silent. And you're helping other people by speaking out.
And ultimately, you know, this is about, you know, I know you mentioned about, you know, somebody on your team that had taken their own life, you know, and I know the suicide rates are up. And the police federation, they've got a pro campaign going on called STEP.
Yeah.
And, you know, that emphasizes the importance of, you know, if you have a dysregulated team, they're not going to get the best outcomes for you. And, you know, as we know, figures and stats and results are what drives any organization.
Yeah.
And you've got to look at the bigger picture here. And unless you look after your people internally, who can then, you know, with the right training, with the right emotional support and the right, you know,
resources, just any.
Yeah. You know, then, you know, they can then do better at their job. They can do better at supporting victims. They can do better at, you know,
doing their job.
Getting justice, and that is ultimately what the job is. It's getting justice,
exactly,
and securing safety for the public.
Yeah,
and you know that's going to help your outcomes.
Exactly, and it will help what these systems love so much: their reputation. You know, if you have decent employees, you'll have a decent service, and you'll have a decent reputation. And then you know, so yeah, I mean. Well, hopefully I'm trying to contribute to change. Hopefully that will happen soon.
Well, we can just keep shouting, can't we? That's all we can keep doing, you know.
Exactly.
It's going to be a slow burner, but yeah, I think it's one that's worth keeping on at.
Definitely, definitely. I definitely agree. Change will happen.
It
Ever
will.
surely but slowly. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining me. It's been lovely having you on.
Thank you for having me. I've had such a lovely time.
And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in and being part of this vital conversation. If you feel inspired to take action and support women, girls, and children affected by abuse, please visit the show notes in Kate's bio on UK Health Radio. There, you can register your interest in becoming a certified trauma-informed expert, specialising in topics that address this ever-growing crisis. Together, we can shape a safer future for those who need it most. Until next time, stay strong, stay informed, and remember, you are never alone.